A young woman's body is found near some stormwater drains. Her identity would be known within hours. But solving her murder would take time. Time that was on the side of her killer.
This is a man who goes out hunting for females.
He started bashing me. And choking me.
He said, well, this is the sort of thing you think I do.
One explanation is there was no connection between the offender and the victim.
He pulled out a knife and put his hand over my mouth. He was going to kill me.
By the grace of God, she came to in the river and crawled out the other side.
It was essential that the community be protected.
I need an ambulance at Wynnum train station immediately.
We were frightened that if we didn't get him quickly, he might strike again with fatal results.
Nearly half the Australian population is blood type O. So if this blood group is found at a crime scene, the chances of linking it to a suspect without corroborating evidence would be remote. And that's what detectives were facing in this case. DNA hadn't arrived, and a killer was walking around scot-free.
I arrived at the crime scene and it was very desolate. Even though it was so close to the road, it just seemed to be a long way away from anywhere. There were a number of drainways that ran under the gateway to Hill Road, and the surface of the road was probably 15 to 20 metres above these drains. So you could hear vehicles going across up top, but you couldn't see them, and they couldn't see you either.
The body was located on its back on a concrete apron near one of those set of drains and was in a naked condition. There were 4 stab wounds to her upper chest and upper abdomen area.
The wounds were relatively close together. They appeared to have been done in a frenzy and they were very concise.
And on the evidence that I saw in situ that night, the target of those 4 stab wounds was her heart.
Another wound was a bruise to the forehead. It would appear that she was either concussed or unconscious at some stage, and she had some dirt discoloration and drag marks on her body. And they corresponded to drag marks on the apron, which had dirt on it.
We had linear marks there that were absolutely consistent with the body being dragged without fighting. And there was no blood associated with the drag marks, as I would have expected had she suffered any of those stab wounds down on the grassed soil area. So the evidence at the scene pointed to me that a sexual assault, perhaps a rape, had occurred at a location in the grassy soil area. The victim had then been dragged on her front up the apron a short distance and very efficiently killed by one or more of the stab wounds through her breast area.
The female had her hair put into a spike fashion, something like a Gothic style. She had makeup on, her eyes were a little darker than possibly should have been, so it would appear that she'd been dressed up to go out somewhere.
There was no handbag, purse or clothes in sight to help them know who the young girl was. As her body was taken to the morgue, Mike McKay received a call.
We were contacted by the Wynnum police, who advised us that a young girl by the name of Janet Phillips had been reported missing.
15-year-old Janet Phillips had been to a party the night before her body was found.
It was a friend's 21st, and we all went out as a family. Janet was in a very happy mood. She spent all afternoon doing herself up and she looked absolutely beautiful. We took a photo of her. The next morning, I got up to see if Janet was home and she wasn't. And I got very worried. It was very unusual. Janet always rang me. That was the rules. And I knew in my own heart that something happened to her.
Police have released the name of a 15-year-old girl whose naked body was found in a drain in the Brisbane Bayside suburb of Mansfield yesterday.
15-year-old Jeanette Phillips of the eastern suburb of Lotta had been repeatedly stabbed. The schoolgirl was last seen at a barbecue she'd attended with her parents in the nearby suburb of Wynnum.
We interviewed all the people who attended the party on the night of the 18th of July, and that included both male and female persons, with a view to trying to identify if any of those persons was responsible for the murder of Janet.
Janet was having a good time at the party. She was quite happy. She wasn't drinking. She was only drinking Coca-Cola.
I left and I got home at 11 o'clock. I asked her, did she want to come home? And she said no, she'll stay with her father.
At about 11, 11.30, there was a fight that broke out involving Janet's father and two male persons who gatecrashed the party.
Janet became upset and was quite taken back with the violence and shortly after walked away from the party in a distressed state.
Within hours, Janet was dead. Unbeknownst to her killer, he had left behind a vital clue to his identity.
If you can imagine a pure angel, you got it.
Bob Turner describing his young niece, an innocent 15-year-old stabbed to death just off the Gateway Arterial Road early yesterday. Two young boys found her naked body in a storm drain just on dark. Police are withholding the results of a post-mortem which will determine if she was also sexually assaulted.
Two of the wounds had penetrated the heart. One of them had passed right through the heart, one side through to the other, suggesting to me that the blade would have been somewhere between 11 and 14 centimetres in length and that its width closest to the handle, that junction, appeared to have been up to 2 centimetres. So something like a fishing knife.
As Janet had been rendered unconscious by a severe blow to her head, she had no chance to fight back. No hairs or fibres from the offender were found, but he had left behind his sperm. Janet had been raped.
She wasn't a girl that went out running around or playing up or anything like that. Her parents were very strict with her. And, you know, it just shouldn't happen to that sort of girl.
The next day, we revisited the crime scene with the benefit of daylight and we began another search of the immediate area. Number of earrings and buttons were located near where Janet's body was, and these were later identified as being Janet's jewellery and buttons from the shirt that she was wearing.
But the shoes, skirt, and white blouse she wore to the party were nowhere to be found.
There were 3 partial foot impressions on the concrete apron, and one of those actually extended into the still wet soil area at the bottom end of the apron. There was a distinct pattern, a little spherical ball-type pattern, evident in that sole pattern.
We also discovered a set of partial tire prints.
Those prints were just off the side of the road, an easy spot for a car to pull into and park. Impressions were taken of them, as police believed Janet had been abducted and driven to the spot, a 15-minute drive away from the party.
Janet was last seen alive about 1 o'clock yesterday morning at this Wynnum Hall, where she was attending a 21st birthday party with her parents. She apparently had an argument with someone and decided to leave by herself. Upset, Janet began the 2-kilometre walk home from the Catholic Hall without her parents knowing. Somewhere along the way, she met her murderer. Police have appealed to anyone with information to come forward.
Our investigations in regard to the party centred around all the males who attended that party. There was an instance where Janet was seen arguing with a young male person at the hall.
A description was given to us of what this man looked like, and he was a suspect.
But the young man in the blue shirt was not the only male person of interest that night.
There were a number of people who attended the party who we knew had criminal convictions for matters of assault and drug abuse and sexual activities. And because of that, these people were suspects, and we had to conduct inquiries to try and establish whether those persons had any responsibility in the death of Janet.
Some of the stories they gave us, they told us some untruths. It was found that some of them would give us a version as to how they went home and what time they got home, and on investigation, we would find that that wasn't correct. The gate crashes at the party may have had a motive in that Janet's father did eject them from the party and caused them some grief.
Police knew that Janet had left the party soon after this altercation. And now members of the public were helping them fill in Janet's movements from that time.
A number of sightings of Janet on that night were made. One was sitting on a bus seat outside a pharmacy in the main street, and another one where she was sitting in the gutter near a roundabout at Wynnum in a distressed state. And that a blue Commodore had gone around the roundabout and appeared to be going back towards Janet. But further investigation couldn't conclude whether that was Janet or not.
She was last seen alive about 12:30 a.m. outside this Wynnum chemist just across the road from the party. Her shoes, some jewellery and the buttons torn from her shirt have been recovered, but her clothing and the murder weapon are still missing.
Someone had found a pair of shoes at the rear of shops close to the hall where Janet was last seen. They were identified as being Janet's. It opened up the investigation because it could have been the murderer. He may have found her there, he may have followed her there, or she may have left the shoes there at some stage.
Then there was another sighting of Janet.
A young girl who was coming home late from a date with her boyfriend. It was probably about 10 past 12. She looked across the road and she saw who she believed to be Janet, dressed in the white top and the black skirt, with her shoes off and walking down Chestnut Street, and she was seen to turn right into the Esplanade.
The Esplanade was in the total opposite direction to where Janet lived. If this was indeed the 15-year-old, had her decision to go this way taken her along a path to the killer?
Police do a good job in their crime fighting and whatnot else. Let's see if they can clean this one up in a hurry, because by Christ, there's a few of us who like to get hold of them that done it.
Janet's uncle Bob last Monday, desperate for an early arrest over his niece's brutal murder. 72 hours later, and police admit they're no closer to her killer.
We're very hopeful that the evidence that was located could lead to identifying the suspect for Janet's murder.
But the tyre print was found to be unidentifiable because it was only a partial tyre print. And the sand shoe was found to be a common athletic type of sand shoe, and thousands of pairs had been imported into Queensland.
So that made the investigation very difficult and frustrating.
A thorough search of several ponds near the murder scene today has turned up nothing. Her clothing and the murder weapon are still missing.
A large number of knives were handed in, which were found embedded in trees, found on the side of the road, left down in the foreshore. So each time this happened, we needed to conduct an investigation into the origin of that knife and whether that knife may or may not have been used in the murder of Janet. None of the knives fitted the identifiable features of the knife that was probably used to murder Janet.
One thing was certain. Her killer was male.
Tests were conducted on the semen, which identified that the person who had deposited the semen was a O blood type.
While DNA wasn't available in 1987 to know with certainty who raped and likely murdered Janet, knowing the blood groups of the men detectives suspected would help them narrow down the field.
We asked the males who were out and about that night if they were prepared to volunteer either blood or saliva, and between a third and a quarter of those males that we tested had similar blood groupings to the semen. This meant that we could particularly look at their alibis, particularly look at their statements, and investigate them with a view to either exonerating them or finding them culpable in some way.
And there was always the chance that Janet's killer was a stranger. Something that the scientific officer had considered on the night Janet's body was found.
It appeared to me that the offender in this case was unconcerned about the location of the body. It was located under a bridge on a major arterial motorway. Somebody, probably more sooner than later, is going to happen upon it. And so the offender was unconcerned about that person, that victim being identified. And in one explanation for that is there was no connection between the offender and the victim. They were not known to each other.
During the inquiry, we also concentrated on people who had recently been released from prison. And one of those persons was Lloyd Clark Fletcher. Lloyd Fletcher had been previously convicted of the rape and attempted murder of a young woman in the Innisfail area.
A 19-year-old female was on her way home from a dance in Innisfail and was accosted by Fletcher and dragged to the Johnston River and then proceeded to knock this poor girl unconscious. He assaulted her and raped her. He's then tied her bra strap around her throat so tight that she could not breathe. And whilst unconscious, he threw her into the river. By the grace of God, she came to in the Johnston River and crawled out the other side and found help. And Lloyd was subsequently arrested. Lloyd Fletcher was imprisoned for 10 years as a result of his Innisfail offences, and he was released 3 months prior to Janet being murdered. We did look at any similarities between the Innisfail offences and Janet's offences. A knife was used. Both appeared to have been abducted late at night. There was a fair amount of violence. There was a rape, and also that the clothes were violently ripped from the torso of the girls. We went to his home where he resided with his parents. We asked him if he had come to Wynnum. We asked him if he had sex with a female that night. And we asked if he had travelled on the Gateway Arterial Road that night, and he said that he didn't. We asked him if he had knowledge of Janet Phillips and whether he, in fact, was party to her murder. He denied this, but he was prepared to come to the police station with us in order for us to ask him further questions, and we allowed his father to come to be with him at this time. He told us that at about 7:30 on that Saturday night that he went to the train station and caught a train into Brisbane. At the time, he said he was wearing quite striking cowboy clothes, cowboy hat, cowboy jeans and riding boots.
He stated that he had actually attended the Lennon's Hotel in the city, and then from there that he had hitched a ride at about 11:30 at night in a vehicle which could have been about a HD Holden.
He could offer us no further information as to who that person was or where that person lived or the further identification of the motor vehicle. He said that he returned home about 11:30, and this was corroborated by his parents. We subsequently typed up a statement, but he declined to sign it.
But he was more than willing to volunteer a blood sample.
Forensic tests done on Lloyd Fletcher's blood showed that he was in the right blood group, the same blood group as the semen.
Lloyd Clark Fletcher had just been released from jail for rape and attempted murder. Like 20 other men, he volunteered his blood in the investigation of Janet Phillips' murder. They were all blood type O, the same blood group as the semen found in Janet's body.
We spoke to the people that were ejected from the party. They gave us statements and they supplied us with alibis, which checked out.
The alibis of other men from the party were also checking out, but Lloyd Fletcher's story was being questioned.
He told us that he'd gone into town to a hotel in this cowboy gear. You know, he had really bright cowboy gear. We went into Lennon's and said, look, any bright cowboys? They said, no. I just didn't gel. None of those persons could identify or remember a person fitting that description or wearing those clothes. We couldn't find the fellow who drove him home, and his parents were his alibi at this time.
Today, this scene is peaceful. There's little to show a brutal murder happened here almost a fortnight ago. Despite 20 detectives working around the clock, Janet Phillips' killer has not been found. But it's believed locals may be involved. Police also want more information on a number of cars sighted in the area during the early hours of the July Sunday morning.
It was decided that we erect a sign at the side of the road in order that it prompt someone who might know something of the crime or the criminal.
We received information from members of the public in respect to vehicles being parked on the side of the road and in the vicinity of where Janet's body was located.
We had confirmation of sightings of a Datsun 180B mottled colour on the side of the road, right at the murder scene, in fact, right above the murder scene, earlier in the night or earlier in the morning. And then subsequently, probably an hour, hour and a half later, we had more confirmed sightings of a similar vehicle parked on the other side of the road. It quite sparked our interest because the 180B that had been seen at the scene wasn't dissimilar to a vehicle that was owned by Lloyd Fletcher.
The detectives remembered seeing it when they had first visited Fletcher. He had told them at the time that he didn't take his car out that Saturday night, preferring the train and hitchhiking.
We took possession of Lloyd's car and had it forensically examined.
We were actually searching for any hair or any fibres that may have been transferred from the clothing that Janet wore.
But there was no evidence that we got from the car that would assist us in the investigation.
Lloyd Fletcher was free of a murder charge, but not the police gaze. As a result of some traffic offences, Fletcher found himself back in jail for breaching his parole, but he was out in time for the inquest into Janet's death.
On the 19th of July last year, the naked body of Janet Phillips was found near a drain beside the Gateway Arterial Road at Mansfield. A pathologist told the court today she suffered injuries consistent with having been knocked unconscious, dragged several metres to the drain and then stabbed four times with a knife. Investigating officer Detective Sergeant McKay told the court of exhaustive investigations which came to nothing.
At the conclusion of that inquest, the coroner made an open finding without identifying the person or persons who were responsible for her death.
Janet's murder became one of the cold case files, but it wasn't forgotten, nor was their prime suspect. 2 years on from her death, 31-year-old Fletcher was back in front of the police, but this time in another state.
I had been at a girlfriend's house visiting, and I'd left there about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I jumped on my push bike with my backpack and was riding towards home.
Get off the bike!
I remember everything was in slow motion. I remember turning around and seeing him basically right behind me chasing me. I was terrified and I fell over. He picked me up off the ground. I was bleeding and I knew that he was going to do something bad to me. And traffic started passing us. So he put one arm around me and he had the other arm with a knife at my back. I thought he was going to kill me. I need to do something here to try and save myself. If I don't say something now to someone, I'm going to be killed. A car pulled up and the gentleman put his window down and said, you know, you're right. And I turned around while both the lady and the man in the car were looking at me and mimed help. That's when the woman basically jumped up out of her seat and said, oh my God, this girl's been raped. And they jumped out of the car and came to my aid. And then other people who were driving past had stopped and they all chased him. He got caught in the blackberry bushes and that's when the police came and apprehended him. I always said he had, like, evil eyes. Yeah. Just he looked like a nasty, nasty man.
that appeared to be a continuation of his modus operandi. He's pulled them from the side of roadways, he's used a knife and he's used violence to incapacitate them.
Mike McKay immediately headed to Victoria. He had just taken a statement from Fletcher's father, who told him that his son had lied to them. Fletcher had taken his car out on the night Janet Phillips died, and he came home after the time he claimed.
We were probably hoping that by telling him that Dad had told us the truth, that he may have been prepared to tell us a little bit more of the truth. But in his words, he told us to piss off, that he didn't want anything to do with us.
Lloyd Clark Fletcher was charged and sentenced to 5 years for the kidnapping of 13-year-old Debbie. While he was behind bars, a little-known forensic tool had come into existence, DNA.
When Janet was murdered, it wasn't a science. And probably 5 to 6 years after Janet's death, it was in the infancy of a science. And I did contact the health department in order for blood tests to be run in relation to the DNA so that we could possibly identify Lloyd Fletcher as being the person responsible.
But the test came back negative. Lloyd Clark Fletcher had been eliminated as a suspect.
I was gobsmacked. I honestly believe that Lloyd Fletcher was responsible for this murder, and it was just hard to believe, but it was sort of like, it was like getting second prize in the lotto. It was gut-wrenching.
We need the police quickly!
Shut up! Mate, this is Wynnum train station. A girl has been raped and bashed down at Wynnum train station. I'm not joking around. I need an ambulance at Wynnum train station immediately.
It had been nearly 10 years since Janet Phillips disappeared from a party in a suburb of Wynnum and was murdered. Now another young girl had been attacked in the same area.
She's sitting on the platform by herself. She says she saw the vehicle turn up in the car park, saw a gentleman walking across the overhead walkway, but took no more notice, turned herself away from that direction and continued to read her book.
A guy came up behind me, put his hand over my face, put a knife at my neck and dragged me off.
And she was dragged across the overhead walkway of the railway station from where she was seated at knife point and taken to a black sedan.
He started bashing me, punching me in the face and choking me.
Very fortunately for her, four young local teenagers happened along at that very time to the car park and heard her screaming and went across to investigate, and she managed to scramble out. The person who was trying to abduct her at the time jumped into his driver's seat and with the spinning of the tyres took off in his car. One of the kids actually threw a rock which smashed the driver's side front window. That left glass fragments on the car park asphalt. The scenes of crime people collected the glass, took some photographs, the usual things around the scene.
The young woman involved had been badly bashed. She'd suffered very severe facial injuries.
I think I was unconscious for about 10 minutes. When I came to, there was rope tied around my wrist and there were rope burns on my ankles. All that was going through my mind was that I was going to end up a body found washed up on the pier.
We spoke to Anna and also the four juveniles who were actually our witnesses and took what's called a comfit from everybody. The general description was of a male of average size with dark to possibly greying hair with a beard. The sedan was a dark colour, possibly a Nissan, according to the witnesses.
In a sickening attack at Wynnum Station, a 16-year-old girl was abducted and assaulted at knife point. Thankfully, she escaped.
We actually gave it a fairly extensive media exposure, which was the best tool we could have used, because I received an anonymous call. She said, "I believe the person who attacked that young girl was Lloyd Fletcher. And as soon as she said Lloyd Fletcher, the penny just dropped for me because I knew that he was involved in a 1977 matter up in North Queensland. It was a person of interest in the Janet Phillips murder and had been charged with a matter down in Victoria in relation to abduction of a young girl down there.
Lloyd Fletcher had been released from the Victorian jail after 3 years of his five-year sentence. Now 4 years on, police found him at his parents' place.
Lloyd Clark Fletcher walked out onto the veranda where we were, and he put me back a step when he said, I thought you'd be here, I expected you here. Then I said, why? And he said, well, this is the sort of thing you think I'd do. He told us that he had been to a nightclub in town and drank by himself, bourbons, cokes, didn't talk to anybody. Disturbingly similar to the story he gave police in 1987. He allowed us to take possession of his Nissan motor vehicle. It was an awful black colour, and the interior was black. I certainly wouldn't drive it, that's for sure. You know, it's not something you'd want to be picking up a new girlfriend in, that's for sure. Black, all black and black everywhere, just black, black, black.
The dark colour and make of the car was similar to what the witnesses had seen at the railway station. However, Lloyd Fletcher's car had no broken window.
The lady who had rang up the night before had rung again. She was, in fact, a niece of Lloyd Fletcher. He phoned her in the early hours of the Sunday morning and said that I need to come over. And he turned up there and he had blood on his clothing and a smashed window in his car. And he gave us some story about getting involved in a fight and somebody throwing something at his car and smashing the window. According to her, he'd then taken the seat covers off his car. He'd driven away saying he's going to replace this window.
Before leaving, he threw his bloodied clothes into the washer and used his niece's vacuum cleaner in the car.
I suspect that he gave us his vehicle because he was confident in as much as he'd cleaned the vehicle, confident as much as he changed the glass, and confident to the fact that we wouldn't find anything incriminating in the vehicle.
The vacuum cleaner was immediately seized. Inside, they found numerous glass fragments.
I also examined the outside of the premises and located a number of glass fragments that were situated on the front yard and also in the gutter.
The first task was to prove that Fletcher had, in fact, installed a new window. He had told police that none of his panels or windows had ever been replaced.
When the glass is put into the vehicle at the time of manufacture, the glass is impregnated with a code. The driver's side window was date-coded differently to the other windows of the vehicle. This led me to believe that the glass window had been replaced on the driver's side door.
Fletcher had lied, and there was further encouraging evidence.
As a result of that information, I removed the driver's side door trim and on removing that, I noticed that there were some glass fragments at the base of the door frame.
Forensic investigators now needed to prove that the glass found in the car at his niece's place and the glass found here in the car park at the railway station were one and the same.
We looked at the refractive index, the thickness, the colour, the fracture pattern and the moulded edge. We were able to conclude that the glass from the crime scene is consistent with the glass from the window.
So Fletcher's car was the one in the car park on the night Anna was attacked. And there was more conclusive evidence inside the vehicle.
Obviously, the owner had gone to great lengths to clean the car up, but there were traces of blood that remained behind, and we were able to subsequently test those stains. And the DNA profile matched that of the victim.
Police returned to Fletcher's parents' place with a warrant for his arrest, but he was nowhere to be found.
We were frightened that if we didn't get him quickly, he might strike again with fatal results.
When 16-year-old Anna was rescued after an attempted abduction at a railway station, an anonymous caller and glass fragments left at the scene led police to Lloyd Clark Fletcher. Police had been searching for him for the last 24 hours.
We got another tip-off from an anonymous person, and he was located the next day waiting for a train at the Sandgate railway station.
When we arrived at the railway station, he seemed resigned to the fact that, we were there. He wasn't overly surprised. He got in the car with us, went back to the Wynnum police station.
The complainant made a complaint to this 16-year-old girl that said that she was sitting alone at Wynnum railway station, and she alleges that a male person has come up on her from behind and has taken her to a vehicle by force and has assaulted her in that vehicle. You understand what I'm investigating there?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything you can tell me about that particular matter?
The only thing I'm willing to say is yes, I did.
Beg your pardon?
The only thing I'm willing to say is yes, I did.
The complainant has suffered injuries to her face. Would you have any idea how those injuries may have come about?
Yeah, I assaulted her.
Can you tell me how you assaulted her?
Punched her.
The young lady made an allegation that the male person put his hands around her throat and rendered her unconscious by choking her. Do you have any recollection of that?
No.
None?
None at all.
When found, the girl had a piece of rope tied to her wrist. Did you know how that rope, piece of rope would have got to her wrist? Well, have you any recollection of the rope?
No.
Lloyd, how do you remember you did it? How do you know you did it if there's a few incidents there that you can't remember?
Well, news guys are telling me you've got evidence against me.
Well, we're telling you, obviously, certain things, but we asked you what you remember of that day and that evening.
Yeah, all I can remember is going to Hoagie's.
Yeah.
And drinking.
Yeah.
And driving into Wynnum.
Yeah. Right.
He claimed to be suffering from blackouts.
All right, you can describe the girl for me?
No.
You know what colour skin she had?
No.
All right.
I didn't believe one word of the blackout, certainly not. Just told us enough to say, right, yes, it was me, but without giving away too many home secrets, I think, that's all.
There's an allegation a knife was used. That's all I would put to you, OK?
No, well, I don't own a knife of any sort except a fishing knife, which is this big,
yeah,
and which is in my fishing bag at home.
39-year-old Lloyd Fletcher was charged with Anna's assault.
I wasn't surprised that Lloyd had re-offended. And there was a satisfaction knowing that he'd been captured, and it was also a bit of an adrenaline rush in that it gave us another opportunity to speak to him about Janet.
Mike McKay always believed Fletcher had killed Janet Phillips. While an early DNA profile had ruled him out, McKay asked that Fletcher's blood, which had just been taken, be compared again to the semen kept in cold storage from Janet's case.
Came back as a positive match. They said, yeah, there's one in 4.9 million possibility. We said, well, what about the first time? When I'd previously asked for Lloyd's blood to be checked against the semen at the John Tong Centre, it would appear that they've pulled the wrong blood, which gave us the negative reading. We were required to go and inform him of the DNA implications. We set up an interview room at the prison, and he came into the room and I asked if I could interview him in relation to Janet, and he immediately again told us to piss off.
He refused point blank to talk to myself and Michael and had wanted nothing to do with us.
They apparently had spoken to him on a number of occasions and he didn't like them at all.
He agreed to be interviewed by Peter Scanlon.
The scientist has compared specimens of your blood. Now, the results show that the spermatosa in Janet Phillips matches yourself. Can you offer us any explanation why a qualified scientist would make those findings?
No, you're scientific. That's what he's come up with. Mm. And I just
on that night, as far as you can recall, Janet went to Wynnum. You went on the Gateway Arterial Road. And you definitely don't know this Janet Phillips.
No.
Did you have sex with any girls over that weekend?
I never went out with anybody that night.
And you didn't kill her?
No.
As a result of that final and ultimate interview, we came to the conclusion that Lloyd Clark Fletcher should be charged with murdering Janet Phillips.
The charged man, a 39-year-old former labourer, was escorted by police to Wynnum Court this morning to hear charges of murder. It's alleged that in July 1987, Lloyd Clark Fletcher abducted, raped and stabbed to death 15-year-old Janet Phillips.
We don't give up, we don't forget, and at times we have successes.
I couldn't believe it. It was him after all this time, 12 years down the track.
He's pleaded not guilty. Prosecutor Paul Rutledge told the court, in raping Janet Phillips, her attacker left his mark.
But 10 years before, that calling card could not be decoded. Lloyd Clark Fletcher had raped, murdered, and left Janet Phillips in the place he had taken her, thinking he was safe.
And at that point in time, he was safe, because no one had seen him attack her. No one had seen him take her out of the car. And as far as he was concerned, he hadn't left any traces there which could pinpoint him as being the attacker. But this was before DNA.
Lloyd Clark Fletcher is a depraved and sadistic predator of the worst kind. Last night, a Brisbane Supreme Court jury found him guilty of the rape and murder of 15-year-old schoolgirl Janet Phillips. He was sentenced to life in prison.
The prosecution, however, didn't feel a life sentence was enough for Fletcher. That meant that he would be eligible for parole. So, when sentencing for Anna's assault came up, Paul Rutledge put forward his case.
I then presented to the court the circumstances not only of the attack on Anna but also the circumstances, the disturbing circumstances in relation to his attack on a number of other females. Fletcher's history is one of extreme violence. One has a picture of a male who goes out hunting for females, a clear intent to kill. Clearly the type of person that required an indefinite sentence. He clearly represents a danger to the community.
A Supreme Court judge put an end to Fletcher's long and horrific criminal history, giving him an indefinite sentence. That means he'll die in jail.
Lloyd Clark Fletcher is finally paying for crimes he committed over a 20-year period. But given his history, police are not convinced that they have heard the last of him.
We say in the police that you never get caught for all the crimes, and I honestly believe that he would be responsible for other serious crimes, but unfortunately, we haven't got the evidence.
With all my experience, I probably tend to think that there are things that we need to talk to him about that he hasn't told us about.
And I think that if he's ever released, he'll re-offend. I do believe that he's in the best place. And I only thank God for the improvements in science and, of course, the DNA.